Hi, Carm Capriato here, and welcome to Automotive Aftermarket Talk Radio. Remarkable results, and episode 371, and an enlightening discussion with three technicians. An interesting twist in this interview is that one of these techs works for a dealership, and his contribution to the discussion is important for you to hear. Now, here's a taste.
And a lot of times, I have to stop those guys midway through. And I'll tell a lot of those guys, one of the signs of a really skilled tech is somebody that doesn't have to talk bad about anybody else. Usually the guys that struggle will point out how somebody else is struggling to make it seem like they're doing better.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, Carm here, and thanks for listening. I'm just back from a great weekend at Super Saturday in Warminster, PA, a great event from ASA, Pennsylvania. Hey, look for a bunch of interviews that were recorded there. Hey, did you know that listening is an art form? You know, you can hone your skills and get the remarkable ideas and insights out of every episode, and your goal is to listen to learn just one thing. Hey, the episode is made possible through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts. You know, when you need to search for parts, get the latest technical updates, or sign up for the Garage Rewards and Tech Loyalty Program to earn some swag, go to fmmotorparts.com. Join the ecosystem like new Facebook friends James Halderman, Haru Lindazu, and Bradley Lawrence McCombs, and new LinkedIn connections Larry Daniel and Devin Kelly. If you've not joined yet, find the links at remarkableresults.biz/social. Be sure your smart device is linked to your car, because if you're like me, I do some great thinking when I drive and use the podcast to help get your smart thinking motor running. Hey, joining me in this episode is Mike Reynolds, Mobile Automotive Service Solutions in Charleston, South Carolina, Shane Steele from Hoover Dodge, located in Somerville, South Carolina, and Robert Griffin, owner and technician at Griffin Transmissions. Mike, Shane, Robert, and I met up at ASTE, the Automotive Service and Tech Expo 2018 in Cary, North Carolina. We discussed the most pressing issue on their solutions to the tech shortage and retention. You'll also hear talk on aftermarket training versus dealership training and how to handle and fix mistakes that happen in the shop. Find the panel's bio and the key talking points at remarkableresults.biz/E371. Now, here is some enlightening perspectives from a technician's point of view. Hey, a warm welcome to a technician's roundtable here at ASTE. I'm in North Carolina at the ASTE show, and with me is Mike Reynolds from MASS. That's the name of your company.
Correct.
It stands for?
Mobile Automotive Service Solutions.
You're a mobile tech guy, Mike.
Yes, sir.
We met at Vision last year.
Yep.
Cool. It was great to meet you.
Absolutely. Likewise.
Put you in touch with a couple of guys, didn't I?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. A lot of the guys I've been networking with are incredibly helpful.
Beautiful. So. Great to hear it. And you're also an adjunct instructor at Trident Tech?
Correct.
And where's that located?
Charleston, South Carolina.
Also with us is Shane Steele from Hoover Dodge.
Yep, that's correct.
You got a connection to this guy over here, right?
Yeah, he was one of my instructors at Trident Tech.
How cool is that? Small world, always a small world.
Yeah. Well, he opened me up to a lot of opportunities coming to aftermarket events like this. Uh-huh. So I get a lot of extra training thanks to meeting him. So,
audience, please listen to what he just said, because we're going to talk about that. And Robert Griffin is with us from Griffin Transmissions, owner and technician.
Yes, sir.
Started out, you were a tech who said, I got to open my business.
Yes, sir. Started as a tech and just kind of turned into running a business.
Great. Well, okay. Great diversified group here. So it was Shane who told me just before we turned on the recorder that I take dealer training and now aftermarket training.
Yes, I take both.
What's the difference?
Well, the dealer training is very focused to our brand, so Chrysler, Dodge, Fiat, that type of thing. The aftermarket training gives me a little bit more variety, I guess you would say.
Why do you need it as a focused brand technician?
Because it gives me different ways to diagnose stuff. So our aftermarket on our dealer training is very diagnosed it this way because that's the way the vehicle is set up. It's like an engineering focus type training. So they want us to do it like a diagnostic tree, that type of thing. When I come to aftermarket trainings, I get a lot of tips and type of shortcut things. And then sometimes every now and then we get aftermarket brands that come into our dealership that we sell. Or like a used car we saw someone need to get worked on. So if I come to aftermarket trainings, I get little tips on some stuff that might be coming up with that.
And I'd be curious how much scope training is involved with Chrysler's factory training.
Oh, that's another thing. So I don't get a lot of scope training. I've actually got a lot of scope training coming to these aftermarket events like this.
Wait a minute. It's because they don't want you to go that deep? They just want you to replace the part based on the tree?
Yeah, essentially. It's more so dealership life isn't as much rebuild. I mean, I do like differential rebuilds, but for instance, like Robert does transmission rebuilds, we just replace the transmission. So they don't want us to go real deep in like that. So let's say you would like scope a torque converter clutch in a transmission. If you were working in like maybe an aftermarket shop, ours is a torque converter clutch. If we think it's bad, you just replace it.
Don't go there. Just replace it.
You exactly. Don't even worry about if it's in that at that area of the transmission. Stick a new one in there.
But is it because they're getting paid warranty, or are these out of warranty cars too?
Mainly, we do a lot of warranty work, but even our out of warranty cars, they still recommend replacing.
I mean, I see that a lot. Also, I've had it. You know, cars towed into our shop, and they've been in the dealership, and they say, oh, they told me I needed a transmission. I just had a Honda Accord with a broken shifter cable come in last week, and Honda quoted them on a new transmission. I don't know. I guess that was the complaint was it won't come out of park. And so did they even look at it? They just, you know, it's transmission. Sell them a transmission.
So that's the standard operating procedure, basically.
Yes. But like I said, we rebuild our differentials, which is something not a lot of shops do anymore. But like transmissions, any big stuff like that, engines, just replace it.
I've never had any dealer training. I started out independent. I've always have been. With the dealer training, is it very super specific about certain cars and certain problems, or do you cover, you know, several different models in your make?
You know how, like, when you come to aftermarket trainings, they give you case studies and stuff? It's set up the same way. So our case studies all revolved around common issues we have. Like, for instance, on our 5.7 engines, we have a common issue with the lifters. Stop feeding oil to the rockers. Rocker locks up, wipes out the cam. You got to put new cams and lifters in there. Cams, lifters, and rockers. So when we go to our dealership training, we have case studies all about that.
Dealership, of course, all the warranty work you do, it's low mileage cars.
Yes.
And you're seeing failures like right out of the gate, and that's kind of what you're looking at.
Yes.
And that's how you know it's a different independent shop. I'm getting cars in our shop, you know, 200,000 miles on. We're still fixing these cars.
Older vehicles.
And we're not seeing those same pattern failures. If that motor went 200,000 miles, it probably didn't fail because of the case that you guys saw
exactly
in the dealership. We're seeing a different failure. So it's a completely different failure type from when independent to dealership. I mean, not say you guys don't get things like that. Someone may bring their 200,000 mile truck in there.
Yeah, but do they? Do you ever see some really old cars, high miles?
We see older, because we sell dualies. People use dualies to haul cars. So we see a lot of dualies come in that have high mileage just from over the road driving. But as far as like our economy line or smaller SUVs and stuff, we don't get anything. We might get like slightly out of warranty, but nothing crazy out of warranty.
Guys, we've been talking here, not only here and in the hallways and here at the expo and yesterday on our panel about the shortage that we have with technicians. And I know you're very passionate about that, Mike. And I don't want to talk about the technician shortage. I want to talk about solutions to it.
I don't know that anybody has one solution out there. We were working on a technician group here in Charleston, which still kind of have put together. We have the framework for. Been working with kind of some of our vendors in town and trying to get some of them involved. But it's a struggle. I was actually really impressed to see that Robert brought most of his whole crew out here. Most of the shop owners don't really have that same mentality. And the techs don't either. So it's difficult. In the position that I'm in, I drive a big orange ambulance, and I'm flashy, and I want these guys to see that, hey, if you focus, you buckle down, you learn, you go to these trainings, there is a route to success. You could own your own mobile company. You could own your own shop, just like Robert. But a lot of these guys don't really see that, and it's hard to kind of paint that picture, I think.
With our industry and getting, you know, technicians in here that want to do this work, it can be tough, as you guys know. Sometimes the reward is not there. These guys are, you know, you spend a lot of time learning a trade and a skill, and you go out there in the field to actually apply it, and you're not being compensated or treated fairly. And there's a lot of shop owners to blame for that. There's a lot of good shop owners, but there are a lot of bad shop owners. And, you know, the technicians are going out there. And a lot of them like stay at the dealership because the dealership, it's a little bit of a better environment. But I've heard some stories of getting worse. And independents can be hit or miss. That's why I brought my guys up here so they can further education, make them feel like they're, you know, making a difference. And I'm also paying them to be here, which is important. Because how do you help a technician grow if you're not go if you're going to have them go to a training seminar and then they're not making any money?
Absolutely. But as far as solutions, that's great. But your shop or your company, unfortunately, at this point only makes up a small percentage of the technicians in Charleston. So it doesn't really it's great. It's awesome. But as a full representation of our industry and just in Charleston, but I would assume nationally, it's hard to find that. So
it'd be more widespread. We need to see more of it.
So I've worked at two dealerships now, and I think one of the problems is a team mentality. So both the dealerships I worked at, that's like I was saying before we started, now the young guys don't want to join up into the industry right now. That's because the older guys are, you know, trying to push them away. I think the older guys are worried about younger guys coming in, so they try to push them away. So it's not really...
How do they try to push them away? What happens?
Bad mouthing the young guys who make a mistake or something.
Whoa.
So it's just kind of... Like, I've worked at two dealerships. My first dealership I worked at when I was new, it's rough. It gets very cutthroat. Older guys don't want you there. They don't want you taking their hours.
They don't write their hours. They don't want
exactly.
you getting that stuff. Is it because are they changing the structure of how they're giving the work out and who gets the work?
No, my shop foreman, luckily, it's the same one I work for now. I came with him when he left my other dealership. But he's very good about handing out work equally. But let's say you're a younger guy and you make a mistake. Mistakes happen, right? The older guys, especially in my first dealership, they would tear into you. Than just badmouth you and make you feel like you shouldn't be doing this. Exactly. So then you feel like you shouldn't be doing this because all the guys, you know, are badmouthing you. Young guys don't want to make any money.
You know that 70% of professional technicians install Moog? Do you know who is best in class in engineering R&D? Do you know who holds 47 patents and has 28 dedicated engineers on staff? Yeah. Moog. You should know that 85% of Moog socket-style components are manufactured in North America, and that makes Moog best-in-class for manufacturing. And since 1966, every NASCAR championship has been won on Moog parts. But you knew that. I know why you install Moog. They solve your problems. Over the years, Moog has provided problem-solving innovations like a patented Preston cover plate, powdered metal gusher bearing technology, compression-loaded ball joints, with a pre-installed integral dust boot, and vertical control arm bushings. You know why you install Moog. Enhanced durability, improved performance, and ease of installation. For more information, go to moogparts.com. Now you know. Brake jobs are a staple component of all successful shops, and getting the brake job right helps build a quality reputation for any shop. When the best is called for and stopping distance, rotor wear, and pad life are important to every shop and its customers, Wagner OEX brake pads are your only choice. Based on benchmark testing conducted by Link Engineering Company, Wagner OEX pads can stop a pickup, SUV, or CUV up to 50 feet sooner. Based on internal testing comparing new Wagner OEX to other Wagner offerings, the unique design of Wagner OEX increases pad life up to 2 times longer. The customized shape and slot design of each of the more than 114 SKUs creates a turbulent airflow that allows for cooler operation and improved stopping power for the vehicle on which it was designed. Wagner OEX cover 95% of the U.S. market of pickups, SUVs, and CUVs. Wagner has the science behind stopping perfected. They conduct 13,000 critical tests each year, and as of today, have 258 issued patents with 68 patents pending. Wagner has earned their stripes. Now they want to earn yours. Install Wagner OEX, the customized brake pad that can stop your customer's truck up to 50 feet sooner.
You just broke the code here for me, Shane. I'm blown away by this because the stats that I am familiar with in post-secondary that go, and so many of the students are going to the dealer OE programs, ASEP and, you know, CAP and ASSET, and they're 2 years and they're out. You know, and I'm sitting here as an advisor on a panel in community college, and as the kind of the voices of the aftermarket, this podcast that we broadcast all issues. And I was really struggling to learn what the churn at the dealership was about. And I think you just broke the code. They're just not brought into the family.
Exactly. It's the team mentality is not there. And, you know, young guys, they see that. They feel like they're not welcome. Feel like they're doing everything wrong. No one really wants to help them out. And then they...
So do you see a lot of long guys leave?
Exactly.
Now, are they going, are they just tossing off aftermarket, or are they going to still turn wrenches but in a different industry or trade?
In a different industry or trade. And Mike knows this also from being in school, but we had guys leave and go work for forklift companies or go work on combines.
Let's talk about that. You were telling me that you started, that the program started with 30, what was in senior year, junior year?
Or no, this is
freshman?
Just Shane's class, I think they
just
started.
Just Shane's class.
Just my
class. Your class started with 30.
Correct.
And four graduated?
Four left.
No, four are left still. They haven't.
Oh, there's only four left, and no graduation yet. There's only, so you lost 26 students.
Yep.
From what time? What was this?
In a year span.
In a year span. Yep. And they it wasn't for them. They thought maybe it was. They didn't want to work with their hands. It was too high tech. Give me some reasons.
I guess that's more of a tough question for me to answer. I mean, if I'm speaking bluntly, I think a lot of those guys may be in the program because mom and dad said get out of the house or stay in school. And so
are you touching base with these people once they leave the program?
Well, not
like give them a phone call, say, hey, what happened, why?
No, not really. I mean, I see those guys if they work in the industry, so but that's not very many of them. There are a couple students, actually not many from your class, because when I got your class, there were only four. There were five, I think, right? And we lost one. But the class that I had before that, there are a few that I keep in touch with.
I sat in some classes for new marketing, things like that, and dealing with customers, calling them back, touching base with them why they didn't come back, that might help figure out some of the problem with the technicians getting in the field. Why are they leaving the class? Why are they not finishing the class? Call them and ask them, hey, what's going on, man?
I think it's a job for the department chair of the college to reach out and we need to do a survey.
Somebody should.
And find out what happened to the student, and then find out when the student leaves the dealership why they left.
One of the things might be because they start working in industry and they see
the real world.
Payback isn't what they were expecting out of it. So then they realize it's not for them. Why should they finish the program
starting
at that
wage?
Point?
Starting wage flat rates.
I believe it's right about 16. That's what they start flat rate at my dealership is 16. I'm not sure how the aftermarket is.
Is it like straight flat rate? You know, if you turn 0 hours, you get $0, or
no,
do you have a base salary?
They give you a 25-hour guarantee
okay.
at my dealership, and then once you break through, you get whatever you actually turn.
And as being a former technician, that's how I run my guys. Either they're on salary or we do a base, and then turn hours on top of
well,
that.
Well, that's the way I think it should be, man. But I know other shops that just
my job as the owner to make sure there's work in that shop for them to do. It's not their fault if I can't bring in the work for them to do. So they should at least have some kind of guarantee. That way, I can show them, hey, I appreciate you. You're an important asset of this company. I know things are tight, but here's at least this amount of money, and I'll do my best to get more work in here, get things moving.
Well, I think the guarantee is good also, especially if you're like an apprentice, because you're still flat rate, so you're still turning hours, and you still get that sense of achievement at the end of the week.
Right. And if you're not making the money, like if you're true flat rate and you turn like 0 hours, you got $0, how can you learn when you're stressed out about I can't go
bills.
Buy groceries.
Exactly.
I can't pay my cell phone bill. So you can't learn. I got to go do something else. Like, it's not for me.
I think we need to talk about, putting ourselves in the student's situation where, let's say you just spent 6 months in school, you get into a shop, you're changing oil in a filthy, disgusting shop. Depending on what shop you end at, who is the leader of that shop as far as a technician? Is he happy in his career? Is he qualified? Is he certified? Because when you get in a shop as a young technician, you're looking at the top dog in that shop as your future, right? And I know in our town, we have very few master techs, and if we do, they're, you know, they may or may not be the greatest techs. They may hate their job. They may be looking for an out. And I think we're in that transition point where a lot of the older generation is kind of ready to retire, and they're not getting into the diagnostics, and they're not interested. They're saying, "Well, I got five more years and I'm out."
They don't want to learn the new stuff.
That is completely true, because it's the same thing going on where I'm at too.
I think you look at some of those guys and you see that their back hurts. They've been doing this for too long. They're beat up, and you say, "Okay, well, you know what? This is what my future looks like." And then you have a forklift company come and pluck you out of the shop that you're at and give you better pay and buy you what work boots and a company
work
phone and a company
laptop.
Truck and,
yeah.
And you never look back. So one of the things that we talked about with this technician group that we were putting together is creating a sense of pride in what we do. I'm very proud of my ability to diagnose vehicles or what I do every day. It's problem solving. It's fun. It's challenging. It's ridiculously challenging. But something about it, it's I go into the day, everything is new. There's always some sort of problem I get to solve, and that's a really awesome thing for me to get to do. But when I go to tell people what I do for a living, I'm not very proud to tell them that I fix cars for a living or I diagnose vehicles. That's not a very prideful thing.
You need to come up with a brand new personal mission statement and your 30-second speech that really brings value to the computer that you're working on. I mean, you're a network specialist. You're a diagnostician.
Some kind of, but exactly. That's a hard, a lot of guys aren't doing the kind of stuff you're doing.
Yeah, but I also don't want to separate myself from the industry in that same sense. One of the things we talked about with this technician group is certifying technicians as diagnosticians or technicians that are, we wanted to use the term elite technicians. And one of the things that I really believe in is training. And one of the things that I learned is that if you're in a shop and you work and your top dog is this miserable old guy with a hurt back, and then you come and you sit in this training class and you hear these guys ask questions and they're interested and they want to learn, that gives you that vision of, wait a minute, what is this guy doing and why is he here and why is he excited? Maybe there's something more to this. So that's why I really believe in training. Send your oil change techs to a scope training if you want. Put them in that environment where they may see something that they don't see every day in the shop. And so what we talked about was getting certifying technicians for the amount of training that you do per year. So if you do 10, 15 hours a year, we'll give you an elite technician certification. One of the things we also worked with is some of our local suppliers, and we got, as of now, verbal agreements that, hey, if we come up with this, we get these guys a card, they train for X amount of hours per year, let them bring their card on your tool truck, give them 10% off of tools. Or we work with some of the parts suppliers and talk to them about, hey, if this shop employs X number of elite diagnosticians, can we get them a parts discount? So there's some incentive for the shop owners to send their technicians.
And that helps getting the shop owner, you know, to open their eyes. And sometimes the only way you can get to them is, you know, at their wallet.
Absolutely. So
and
that's
the problem we ran into that with that is turnover rate. A lot of shop owners are wondering, why should I spend money to send my guys to training when the you know everyone else leaves in a month
but
or 2 months?
Why is this such a big deal anymore? We talk about it over and over again. It training's an investment. We all know that. Is it that I just don't have the money? And there's another excuse. I mean, what's the excuse behind the excuse, guys?
I'm sure there's money there. Some shoppers just don't see the value in it. Like, well, we got cars here. They're getting fixed. They're leaving, but they don't see how things can improve, and they don't see the value in sending their people to the training.
So the shop owner doesn't have any vision. Mike, you get called out on jobs because they get stuck.
I'll tell you a perfect example. I have a shop that called me out. Vehicle had an oil change at a shop. I don't even know where the oil change was originally done. That vehicle ended up stalling, I don't know, not maybe a few miles, but right after the oil change, the vehicle stalled. Ended up, got towed to this shop. This shop, if I recall right, I think I was originally there to program a module because they thought it was a module failure. I could be incorrect about that, but whatever it was, they called me. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with the vehicle. It ended up being a simple hour diagnostic, a little over $100. And all it was a little bit of dirt in the mass airflow sensor. at about this time, I was also handing out flyers for, I got the guys from Auto Mechanica to send me a stack of flyers, and I was handing them out saying, hey, I'm bringing a bunch of techs up there if you guys are interested in going. And she said, I can't give my technicians a few days off for training. And I said, okay, fine. You know, I figured I'd offer if you're interested. And as I walked out of there, I thought about it. And I said, okay, well, they're willing to pay me over $100 to come out and diagnose something that was caused by an oil change. And the dirt in the mass airflow sensor was from somebody removing the airbox and not installing it correctly. And it just happened to be a perfect storm where a little piece of dirt got sucked up in the air inlet. So ultimately, if you need to call a mobile diagnostician who's going to charge more than your hourly rate to come out and fix a car from an oil change,
people they can do that instead of you coming out and doing it.
So in the future, if you think that you don't need a skilled technician, then can you do oil changes now? Because now we're doing things that, you know, an oil change is causing issues. So it's kind of funny because I left and then I thought about that later and I'm thinking, well, they can keep calling me every time they run into an issue. I mean, that's fine, but I think that's a really good example of why it's important.
How many flyers do you think you handed out?
Just about every shop in Charleston I see. So, I mean,
and then how many techs actually went?
There was what, three of us?
Just three of us, right? So, and if you look around, it's the same. The people who care about training,
same
people
three,
here.
I know.
And the same people that went with us, Auto Mechanica.
Very profound statement that you just said. Someone that couldn't see the value in training, but would be willing to give you $100 for what? Just to fix my problem now. Not realizing that the problem will continue and get bigger.
Well, that's like the shop you ran into where you've been, what, three times now that we place a fuse for them?
Oh, yeah, I do a lot of expensive fuse installations. So one of the things that we run into with issues with training is an issue that I have, too. Getting here, I wasn't able to get here on Friday. I had to work. Scheduling is a big issue, and I love to do as much training as I can, and I'm the guy who pushes training in Charleston all the time, but I have to miss training events within Charleston because I have other obligations. So there's a big disconnect with, can our techs get there? If I'm going to pay for this class, is he actually going to show up? There are a lot of reasons why shop owners aren't paying for the technician training, why the technicians aren't going to the training. I think it's a complex issue, but...
But Mike, give us a few of those reasons that hold water.
Well, so here's a good example. So, okay, I'm going to invest in this technician. He's going to leave, right? Yes and no. I mean, we look at, you talk about millennial technicians, and I'm the quintessential. I've worked for every shop in Charleston. I'm the shop hopper, right?
Oh,
so okay. I'm the perfect example of that, right? But the last shop that I worked for was willing to send me to training. Had I worked for a company in the past, and I have, when I lived up north, I worked for a really good shop owner, and this is where I got this from. He was willing to invest in me. I was working on cars because I couldn't afford to fix my own. And whatever he saw in me, he decided, hey, I'm going to send this guy to training and invest in him. And that shop, had I still lived up north, I'd hopefully still be working there if he didn't can me. That was the transition for me.
But at the end of the day, his investment paid off because you were able to be more productive. You brought him.
Absolutely.
Made him more money.
Well, absolutely. And what it did for me is it I was working there. I was just fixing cars. It was a job. And it put me in a situation where, wait a minute. And within 2 years, I went and got master certified because I realized, hey, and every time I got certified, I got a 50-cent raise or a dollar raise.
An incentive to...
Yeah. And that shop owner, that's John Fowle, that's the best guy I've ever worked for. I love to shout his name out. He is the reason I'm still in this industry.
Where's he from?
It's Cleveland, Ohio, so Willoughby Hills.
So a younger guy's on his way about money. We've talked about this before, Mike, as far as making money, whatnot. But they want to be welcomed into the family like we were talking about earlier. So I kind of had the same situation where I worked at a couple of small shops before I started working at a dealership. And then I started working at my first dealership, and my shop foreman ended up leaving there. And he, as soon as he left there, he brought me with him, and he sent me to all my trainings. So that now I've worked with him for 4 years now, had two different dealerships. So I think, you know, same situation. You would have been shop hopping if you wouldn't have ran into this guy who had belief in you.
Exactly.
And that's a problem with a lot of young guys now in the shops. The belief isn't there.
Money doesn't necessarily build loyalty, and I think that's key in our industry is you believe in a technician, you invest in a technician. One of the other solutions that I love is buying technician tools. So here's a great resource. If I was making $100,000 even a year and you wanted to take $20,000 of that and buy tools with it instead, there is income that I'm not being taxed on, right? And a shop owner can also use that as a tax write-off because that's a tax, that's a tool purchase. But more so, if you're going to buy me $20,000 worth of tools, I would expect to sign a contract that says, okay, well, you own these tools after you complete so many years of service. So that was another thing that I think we wanted to integrate with the technician group and kind of, okay, we're going to be able to get deals on these tools for the technicians, but here's a great incentive for, and numbers-wise, it makes sense. A technician's going to spend X amount of dollars on the tool truck anyway. Why not give them a credit on the tool truck?
That's a huge sore spot with owners, the whole tool aspect. That's the one thing I hear over and over again is shop. What's a shop tool? What am I? Why? What do I buy? And what's the shop owner supposed to buy?
I'm not on the technician side of that fence. I think the technician should have tools. I think if the technicians have
them,
they
should. But there are a lot of tools out there that are expensive and not used every single day that the shop does need. And I think a lot of shop owners should invest in their shop and have those large expensive tools already purchased, ready to go, and at disposal of a technician. Technician shouldn't have to buy every single tool out there. I mean, a basic set of tools, yeah, no doubt. Maybe a good scan tool just for their personal use. I mean, it's good to have a scan tool if you're a technician to have as yours, but the shop should have some also.
Well, what do you see like at your shop since you hire people on? You're the owner of your shop, and I don't hire anyone. Mike's the mobile guy. So at your shop, what do you see with your guys coming in and out of the shop as far as reasons they leave or
I don't have a high turnover rate in my shop. I was a technician, so I try to empathize a lot, and I think I do give a lot more than a lot of the shop owners do, so my turnover is not as high. But I think the ones that have left, it's been mostly not for reasons they were unhappy. They had other opportunities they wanted to pursue or do other things, if they want to go better themselves and go somewhere else, that's fine. It was never really, on bad terms.
Dealership. Are you guys looking for techs today?
Always.
Okay.
Always looking for
everyone
techs.
In Charleston's looking for techs.
Everyone's. And the reason is the churn that goes on
there. The churn. Yep.
Your A techs aren't going anywhere.
No, I'd say all demographics probably go. Ages 20 to 30. We maybe got like two guys. Everything else is 30 up. So the turnover for young guys is just so fast.
Yesterday, in our round table, Lucas Underwood made a statement about dealership technicians not wanting to come to work for an independent because it was harder work, because you had all these things to know, all this other stuff to worry about than this one particular platform, and they were pattern failure people, or they just found it and fixed it and found it and fixed it. If not, they would go to the dealership websites and they would say, if you get this far, replace that part. And the independents wouldn't. Do you hear talk like that, that people would not go to work for an independent?
Yes, from guys I work with. And even sometimes I think like that. I drive a Dodge truck. I know Dodges, Chryslers. So I know what fails with them, how to test them easier. So my diagnostic process for Dodges is very quick. I know what to test for. I know common failures. I know what to look at real quick. So going to aftermarket would be more difficult for me until I adjusted to it.
If you interviewed with an aftermarket shop owner who showed you a caring, loving culture, everybody is family, we do special things for our people, the money is not going to be the issue, would a different environment like that entice you?
Possibly. I've worked for small aftermarket shops before. It would be enticing. Just recently, I interviewed with a diesel shop, a local diesel shop we have, and because I do a lot of big dually diesel work also on the Dodges. So I interviewed with a local diesel shop, and I almost ended up leaving. But that particular diesel shop did a lot more Ford-style work, and I was a little bit hesitant about going in just because I pretty much have to relearn my whole diagnostic process.
Don't hesitate. It's not that big of a deal.
No.
I mean, it's something different. It's not like you're reading French versus English. You read English, like, well, that's French. I don't want to mess with that. It's not that much different. It's just a different name on the front of the truck. They still run off diesel fuel. They still have glow plugs, and they still have the same types of fuel systems. I mean, if you can fix a Dodge, you can fix a Ford, or you can fix a Chevy.
That's another way that this aftermarket training that I go to
I think it
helps out a lot. because I see other vehicles besides just Dodges.
Well, maybe if you keep going to that aftermarket training, you'll warm up to working for an independent.
Possibly. I'll open my own one day.
Very good. Hey, that's cool, because we need a strong level of young shop owners to join, because of our average age of our shop owner out there today and of our techs. It's a vibrant industry, and we've got to have more people, young people in it.
Absolutely, and there are very few techs like Shane and Robert, for example, specifically in our area. So I look at these guys as they're the future shop owners. They are the guys who are going to take our industry over.
Just so the audience knows, go around the room. What's your age, Robert?
I'm 32 right now. I'll be 33 in December.
I'm 24.
And you're 24. I remember where I was when I was 24. Mike?
31 next week.
Wow. I mean, very impressed. Wow. You guys are...
A Gen Y.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Gen Y. I got a bunch of millennials, and I love
you. Exactly, right?
Okay. So the same question I asked Shane, Robert. Are you short a tech?
Yes. I recently did hire a technician, and I still feel like we are short another person. There could still be another person in the shop, and we could still benefit from another person in the shop. But I struggled finding a person that was competent enough to do the job, that the work I had there. And I probably spent mulling over 6 months or better finding the right person. I hired other people, wasn't a good fit, or people that wanted to learn. But at the time, that particular position I had wasn't for a learning environment.
Was there any particular magic that you found this individual?
It was strange. I had a few bad hires. Not their fault. Just wasn't the right fit. And then this gentleman, just all of a sudden, I got a resume popped up on the Indeed after being dead silent for months. Had him come down, do an interview, and he's like, "All right, let's do it." And he's a rock star.
Do you think it's more difficult with you being a specialty shop for you to find guys?
Yes, I think it is, because I mean, the job I hired for was not, it wasn't even for specialty work. What I hired for was general automotive repair, because we're adding that to the shop quite a bit and getting heavy into the general stuff. And so, you know, Griffin Transmission posts a job application. They're like, "I don't work on transmissions. I'm not going to reply to that." But they don't even read, you know, the description and what we're looking for. And they just see transmissions, and they're like, "Nope." And sometimes I think, like you said, the technician themselves is their own worst enemy. They get comfortable where they're at. And sometimes, you know, learning a new thing, and they've been trained, you know, to learn something new, you have to sacrifice something. So they're like, "Well, I'm good where I'm at. I don't need to learn something new, because it's going to cost me to learn that. So I don't see the value in it. So I'm just going to stay where I'm at."
It is hard for people to leave the comfort zone.
That's one question I have for you too, is I know we're struggling to get technicians, period. And I know we have a lot of, not a lot, but a good amount of building shops in Charleston that are looking for builders. How much more difficult is it to find somebody specifically to build transmissions?
A transmission, good luck. I was the main head builder in my shop for a long time until I decided to step away and run the office. But I already had a guy there that he was passionate about transmission work. It's what he liked to do, and he sought it out. And I've had him there a long time, and he's been training under myself and the other gentleman that works there. And he's like, I want to build transmissions. I want to do it. And I was doing it. I said, "Well, you know," I finally sat down. I said, "You know what? I would probably be better served, you know, running the front office instead of cutting my time in two places and doing two things poorly. Let me step up and just focus on the one thing, and let's give him a shot." Because, you know, being the shop owner and the guy that does the work, that's my name on the work and going out the door. And, you know, it's like, well, I'm going to do the work, make sure it's right the way I want it done. And so I was hesitant to let somebody else take that over, but I said, you know what, give them a shot. And it's actually been one of the best decisions I've made, because things are going great in the office. I've been growing leaps and bounds, and he's been doing an awesome job, and he feels a lot better that I've given him that opportunity, and he appreciates that, and he's really taken the time to make sure things are done properly. And he's, you know, he's here learning also.
That goes back to that being welcome into the family,
right?
Thing.
I tried, because, you know, I'm shunning this guy. I'm like, "No, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. I'm holding myself back." And, you know, thought about it. It's like, you know what? Let's do it. What I've got to lose? Let's do it.
If someone feels wanted, they're gonna perform better.
Exactly.
Robert, retention. Talk to me about it. What are you doing?
Recently, we just had a big hurricane scare on the East Coast here. North Carolina hit pretty bad. And in Charleston, South Carolina, they pulled a mandatory evacuation on Tuesday, and the hurricane wasn't scheduled to hit until, you know, Friday or Saturday. So the whole city, the state's evacuated, and so we're still going to work. My guys still want to go to work, and so it's slow. There's not a lot of stuff coming in the door, and it's not my fault. It's not their fault. We're kind of sitting there cleaning the shop and going over things and trying to get some stuff in the door. So at the end of the week, you know, it was looking there. Everybody's kind of looking down, like the paychecks weren't going to be that great. And I'm like, and then we just took off. We came in Thursday, and I paid the guys to be there to help sandbag some things, get the shop cleaned up and ready for the big hurricane. And then we took Friday off, and I paid them for that Friday. So they were paid pretty much a full week. And the shop did poorly, and they weren't there for a day and a half. But I still made sure they got a paycheck. A lot of places, you know, they closed down. Well, you're not here, I can't pay you, and that hurts. A technician, that hurts when you're not there making money. So I made sure my guys had the money there. I make sure I take the guys to training as a group, and we're participate. Everybody gets to pick, like this week or these 2 days, the guys pick all the classes they want to be in. I say, hey, here's a list of classes. What interests you? Go sit in class and do it. I'm going to go do this class. You guys do what you want to do. And I try to talk to them and deal with them as people. Some mistakes happen, and how you handle those mistakes define you. A lot of shop owners and people like that I've seen them, you know, belittle technicians, talk down to them or punish them for their mistakes. You know, they're like, I'm losing money. This is, you need to pay for this. This is your responsibility. Well, it's not. I mean, it's a mistake. Okay.
Do you think that affects retention for those shops?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you whip somebody enough over their failures, they don't want to stay around. So, I mean, if they break apart, I mean, we look at it and something happens. Hey, this starter broke when I was taking this transmission out. Was it because was it of genuine just an accident, or was it something you were doing incorrectly? Let's find out why and kind of fix it. If you're doing something correctly, let's find out what you did so we can make sure we train you so you don't do that again next time.
That's a tone within our industry that I think we need to really needs to change, but it's there. And as a mobile guy, every shop I go into, I get a tech telling me about some other guy that screwed up some car that he had to go behind and fix, whether it's within his shop or whether he's talking about another shop. And a lot of times I have to stop those guys midway through. And I'll tell a lot of those guys, one of the signs of a really skilled tech is somebody that doesn't have to talk bad about anybody else. Usually the guys that struggle will point out how somebody else is struggling to make it seem like they're doing better. But that's a thing within our industry. And so you have to think, let's say you have a guy that maybe he's changing oil and he wants to get into diagonal or doing alignments, right? But he screws up an alignment and the vehicle pulls, and what does everybody do? He badmouths him, right? But what about the alignment that he did, that he found bent tie rods and he fixed this, or he changed the SAI and made a positive, made a good productive decision and had success? I mean, nobody really points those out. And that's one of the things that I think I found through diagnostics, is being able to document everything and take a lot of pictures. And one of the things I love about doing some of these case studies is, like, you know, I worked really hard on this car and I had a success and I want to share it and, you know, arrogantly get a pat on the back on a Facebook page or something, you know. But that's what's really helped me to get past the many, 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 many failures it took to get to the successful diagnostic.
You know, you make mistakes and you get there. As far as retaining that person, it's in the shop, so you have to kind of help them grow and accept, you know, a certain amount of mistakes. And I pay for the mistakes in the day. It definitely does hurt the bottom line, but with the technician improving, it helps.
You don't know how that technician will turn out if you invest into him instead of belittling
right.
him.
You don't know, because, I mean, if you so there's a flower trying to bloom, you just stomp on it, you don't know what it's going to turn into.
I'll give you an example. At my first dealership I worked at, when I first went flat rate, they had me drop a transmission and put a new one in. Well, I had ended up messing up the rear main seal on a Dodge Avenger, so I had to drop transmission, do the rear main seal, put the transmission back in. Well, that was my first time doing a transmission. None of the older guys want to help, so I put bolts back in the wrong spot. I ended up drilling through the transmission and destroying it, right? So they ended up getting rid of me, firing me, right? Luckily, my shop foreman, who was at that shop, still saw something in me, helped me out, and now where I'm at now, I can drop to admission, put them back in.
I mean, that goes back to that team environment. You know, they saw you made a mistake and you're struggling. Instead of stepping up and saying, "Hey, you need quick help or something like that. Let me give you a tip or something like that. I can help you get that figured out. Let's get this thing out of here." I mean, that's what I try to do in my shop. Is everybody kind of a team player? And, you know, if it's Friday and we're trying to get, you know, a car delivered and done, and somebody's struggling to get something, hey, go help your guy over there get that done so we can all get out of here at a good time. I don't want that guy to be sitting here till, you know, 7 o'clock trying to get this car done. Help him out. Let's get it done.
Then you get the guys who say, I get paid flat rate. Why am I going to go help that guy out?
We don't breed that mentality, and very few shops do. That's I think, one of the downsides of flat rate, but there are ways to work around it. It's just having the right shop format.
It's just changing the way the industry looks at technicians and how they're paid and what they're worth.
Hey, guys, I so enjoyed this. Thank you for being so conversational amongst yourselves. I just loved it. I learned a lot. And I think you really hammered home some really good, important issues that I think we're all dealing with. Good side in, you know, in the challenges that we have. Mike Reynolds, M-A-S-S, Mass. Thanks for being here, Mike. And Shane Steele from Hoover Dodge. Robert Griffin, technician and business owner at Griffin Transmissions.
Thank you, Donald.
So appreciate you guys coming. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Mike, Shane, and Robert, for your time during the 2018 Automotive Service and Technology Expo in Cary, North Carolina. I had a blast hanging with you guys, and I'm sure our listeners appreciate your perspective. Find the panel's key talking points and links at remarkableresults.biz/E371. Hey, are you listening to the new podcast, For the Record? Well, it flows right inside your subscription, and it's on the website. Cool, crisp, and often fiery opinions from your aftermarket colleagues. Hey, don't forget, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Email me, carm@remarkableresults.biz, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.